We are now going to turn our attention stateside to what's going on in Capitol Hill that's going to impact each and every one of us. Now, Congress Republicans, they debuted tax bills in both the House and the Senate. Trump and the GOP, they're referring to it as plans for the middle class, despite them actually being a boon to corporations and the wealthy. Well, we'll see what Dean Baker, our guest, thinks about that. While the House is primed to pass its bill today, and it is said that House Republicans met with Trump just this morning, the Senate bill seems to have a rockier road. Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell decided Tuesday to tie a partial repeal of Obamacare, yep, they're after repealing Obamacare yet again, to their plan. Basically, it would get rid of the Affordable Care Act individual mandate. Now, on Wednesday, Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin said he's against this tax legislation, making him the first Republican senator to publicly go against it. And Maine's Susan Collins and Alaska's Lisa Murkowski could again be swing votes against this bill, as they've consistently held strong against Senate attempts to repeal Obamacare and pass new health care laws. Before we introduce our guest, let us just go to a short clip from CNN about the tax plan debate.
A pitched battle has broken out between Democrats and Republicans over late-night changes to the Republican proposal.
Is there a summary anywhere? I mean, we got a 100-page document in a table, but surely somebody on the majority side has a list, an abbreviated list of every change that you made at 10:30 last night. What is making you do this to us?
At the heart of the fight, whether middle-class taxpayers will actually see relief in the bill. Republicans now relying on the repeal of Obamacare's individual mandate to finance just that. $338 billion to target things like an increase in the child tax credit and reduction in the plan's rates for middle-income taxpayers.
In short, the goal is to repeal an unpopular tax from an unworkable law in order to provide more tax relief to middle-class families.
But with it comes clear policy and political dangers for Republicans. The CBO says the repeal would lead to 13 million fewer people with health insurance over 10 years. Premiums, on average, would go up by 10% each year. And Democrats now seizing on another potentially damaging element. The plan sets every tax cut for individuals to expire at the end of 2025. Meaning without congressional action, every single taxpayer, including those in the middle class, would see a tax increase. All as the corporate tax cut, slashed from 35 to 20%, remains permanent.
Taking money away from the middle class and working people's health care so they can do tax cuts for the rich.
GOP lawmakers who say they are still on track to pass the bill by Christmas have brushed off those attacks, saying a future Congress would never allow those increases to actually occur, and focusing instead on what sources in both chambers say has been the driving force behind the whole process thus far.
And here to break all of this down for us, I'd like to welcome back to Sojourner Truth Dean Baker, co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research based in Washington, D.C. He's frequently cited on economics reporting in major media outlets, including The New York Times, The Washington Post, CNN, CNBC, NPR, and others. He writes a weekly column for The Guardian Unlimited in the U.K. He also writes for other news outlets. And his analysis have appeared in other print journals, including Atlantic Monthly, The Washington Post, The London Financial Times, and more. And he is Dr. Dean Baker with a PhD in economics. Dean Baker, thank you for joining us.
Thanks a lot for having me on.
Okay, so Dean Baker, I mean, first of all, this thing being dubbed as the middle class tax cut, I mean, we've talked on this show a bit about living in kind of Orwellian times where, you know, one thing is said and actually the opposite is actually going on. Is this a middle class tax cut? And what are your thoughts then about the tax cuts that some individuals will get stopping in 2015, but the corporate tax cut embedded remaining indefinitely?
Yeah, it's 2025. Yeah, that's just symbolic of the hypocrisy in this bill. What they really care about, obviously, are the corporate tax cuts, the tax cuts for wealthy individuals. For example, getting rid of the estate tax, which literally only affects the very wealthiest people in the country. You have to have an estate of more than $10 million to have to worry about that. Most of us aren't in that situation. If this were about a middle-class tax cut, you wouldn't be having those end in 2025. There's very little for the middle class here. A lot of middle class people will pay more. You in California, many people in California, you have relatively high state and local income taxes. You also have high property taxes, mortgage interest deduction. Long and short, people there are likely to pay higher taxes because they're going to end the deduction for state and local taxes. That's not a middle class tax cut, certainly not for people in California. Same with hold in New York, and not coincidentally, these are blue states, states that have voted Democratic in presidential elections and congressional races. The big winners here, no doubt about it, these are wealthy people, and there are some nickels and dimes for more moderate income people. The answer on that really is it just depends. There's a child care tax credit. Currently it's $1,000. That goes up to $2,000, but it's not refundable. So, or not fully refundable, I should say. So if you have a single mother with two kids earning, say, $20,000, they'll get nothing from that. So the people who you might think need it most, you know, and this is a working person, so we're talking about someone who's working, you know, it's a $10 an hour full-time job, or, you know, maybe someone working a little less than full-time at 12, 13, 14 an hour, they'll get nothing from this. Very high-end people, it's often joked, this looks like it was written for Donald Trump. Because there's so many provisions in there, the estate tax that I already mentioned. It gets rid of the alternative minimum tax. That's a catch-all that says that, okay, if you're a rich person and you're able to find all these loopholes, you still have to pay 22% of your income in taxes. Gets rid of that. Donald Trump, in the one return that we have copies of, he paid the alternative minimum tax, would have paid much less otherwise. Lowers the tax rate on pass-through income. So if you're a high-end earner like Donald Trump, and otherwise would in principle be subject to the 39.6% tax rate, it lowers that to 25%. Very good deal for Donald Trump. Even includes special provisions. They reduce the deductibility of interest for corporations. That's actually a good thing. You can only deduct interest up to 30% of your capital. That's a good thing, but there's an exemption for real estate. Well, who has real estate? Donald Trump. The last one in there, that it's almost comical, there's this provision, I have no idea when it got in there, it was already in law, that if you have a golf course and you put in that you will never, you turn over, say, to like Nature Conservatory, you'll never build on it, you get a deduction for that. They leave that in there, which, of course, Donald Trump happens to own golf courses. So it really is almost comical. Like if you sat down with Donald Trump and said, what could we do this, what can we put in here to make you better off? That looks like what they did. I'm inclined to think they didn't actually do that, but it does look that way.
Yeah, I mean, talk about taking people to the cleaners. By the way, polls are showing, the Quinnipiac poll just this past Wednesday, 61% of those polled think the plan will mainly help the wealthy. I mean, not that what people think or, you know, will have anything to do with what the Republicans, how they will move. But also, Dean Baker, what about this thing about going after Obamacare again? I mean, you know, it is true that a lot of people really didn't like the individual mandate in the Affordable Care Act. But the reality is, without the individual mandate, then what's going to happen? You know,
this is the basic problem of health insurance markets, that if you're relatively healthy, you might well say, I don't need health insurance because many people fortunate, they're in good health, and they don't need a doctor most of the time. So they might say, yeah, I'm not going to do that. Well, if you don't have those people in the pool, then the people in the pool are, by definition, less healthy, which means they have higher expenses. And obviously, insurance companies are in there to make a profit, so they're going to raise their premiums. And what that means is, well, maybe you're someone who, not totally healthy, but a little, you know, generally good health, you're looking at a high premium, go, well, maybe I'll take my risk. And you end up with a less and less healthy insurance market, which means higher and higher premiums. So the people who are most in need of insurance are suddenly looking at extremely high premiums that they almost certainly aren't going to be able to afford. Everyone who's familiar with healthcare, you know, the policy debates, I'm not saying the person you grab on the street, although they at this point might understand, be familiar with that as well. But all these people in Washington understand that. This is an incredibly cynical move that's designed to destroy the insurance market because they think it's funny. They think it's funny that people won't be able to get insurance, and then they're going to say, oh, it was all Barack Obama, and hope they'll get away with it. And who knows? On Fox News, they will. But, you know, that's obviously what they're thinking here, and it's an incredibly cynical move that's really quite explicitly intended to destroy the individual insurance market.
Yeah, and 13 million people less will get health care, according to the Congressional Budget Office. And two quick things, too. You know, on this corporate tax story, I mean, they sell this corporate tax thing as though, well, you know, businesses and around the world, you know, are hesitant to do business with the United States because we have this quote unquote high corporate tax. Now, from everything I've read or even people that I've talked to in the business world, this is baloney. I mean, you know, people don't make a decision on whether or not they're going to be doing business with the U.S. based on that. But it's absolute, you know, baloney. But yet they're using it again and again with this kind of trickle down thought. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's a big joke. We've been this route before. There's very, very little relationship between the tax rate and investment, and any number of studies have shown that. So the idea that we're going to cut the tax rate, there'll be this big surge in investment. Also, again, very simple, basic point to point out. When they keep saying the United States has the highest taxes, corporate taxes in the world, that's totally misleading. We have a high tax rate. 35% is higher than most other countries. What do companies actually pay in taxes? They pay roughly 18%, which, again, if you compare it to Germany, France, we're in the middle of the pack. And, you know, depending on the year, we're maybe a little above the middle, a little below the middle. We don't have high corporate taxes in the U.S. Now, just about every economist I know would agree it doesn't make sense to have a 35% tax rate and only collect 18% in taxes. So if you could reduce the rate, reduce loopholes, and end up with similar or more revenue, in my view, but in any case, at least similar revenue, that would be a good thing. But they're not, and they don't even say themselves that they're talking about a tax change that will leave revenue more or less in place. They're talking about collecting a lot less in corporate income taxes, which, again, if we lose that and we aren't prepared to run a much larger deficit, that means it comes from somewhere else. It's going to come from Medicare. It's going to come. One of the things they do here, absolutely incredible, they're ending the tax deductibility of interest on student loans. And also, this is something many of those grad students listening, I used to be in this boat myself, if you get a tuition waiver, if you're working, I used to work as a teaching assistant when I was in grad school, I got a tuition waiver for that. That tuition waiver was equal to the size of my income. You will pay tax on that now. That's going to be a huge blow to people who aren't from rich families trying to get a graduate education, because that's a lot of money out of your pocket.
Yeah, and you know, this is really about stealing from the poor to give to the rich. I mean, that's really you know, what's going on here. And you're absolutely right that clearly, you know, revenue will be lessened and going into the pockets of the wealthy. And I saw an article recently where, again, the GOP are going after welfare. Remember that? You know, with welfare reform, it's already been dismantled, you know, under Democrats, under the Clinton administration, where that safety net is pretty much in shambles. And nevertheless, you have the GOP yet again raising the whole issue of welfare, which has been so racialized and used in such a racist way to help to pay basically for this giant corporate tax cut and loss of revenue. I mean, welfare, but also other social services. I also heard that school teachers, I remember when I was teaching first and second grade, the beginning of each year, I had to go out and buy materials for my students because they weren't there. And I'm hearing now that teachers aren't going to be able to claim that, Dean Baker.
Yeah, no, they're throwing out a lot of things like this, and it's really nickel and dime stuff. So one is, yeah, they're trying to find anything they can to get the revenue. But the other is they, as I say, you know, I was not being in jest when they're saying they think it's funny that the insurance market's going to collapse. Same sort of thing with, okay, so they're going to make it harder for your teacher. You're trying to help out your kids who obviously the school should be paying for it. The school district, this is what we pay taxes for. They should make sure that your kids have the supplies they need. So a teacher out of their own pocket takes it upon themselves to do it. They can't get a tax deduction for that. Meanwhile, for the wealthiest people, they're going to be running wild with all the games this thing sets up. I mentioned the issue about pass-through income. This should have everyone absolutely infuriated because the idea here is, okay, so I have my business and it only pays, I only pay, it's not the business, it's me. I only pay income a tax rate of 25% because I created this shell business that's giving me the money. On the other hand, if I'm working as a normal employee and I'm relatively high earner, you know, say I'm getting $250,000, $300,000, I'm going to be paying 39.6%. Now, why on earth should someone pay less money because they created a shell business? Doesn't make any sense, but you can be sure that the people with a lot of money are going to do that to take advantage of it and pay less in taxes. Also, another thing, we were talking about the corporate taxes. One of the things they do here in terms of an international tax code, they're eliminating the tax on foreign earnings of U.S. corporations. So insofar as Apple's setting up shop in Ireland or wherever else they have operations, they're not subject to taxes on the profits they have there. And what's really important is we don't know how much profits they had there, and they will lie because they have no reason not to, and the IRS isn't going to be able to catch them. So we're going to find that all of Apple's money was made in Ireland. They already do that, but they will have a much bigger incentive. Currently, the tax is deferred, so at some point they'll bring it back to the U.S. and we tax some of it. As it stands under this plan, they would say their profits were in Ireland and Apple doesn't have to pay any taxes to the U.S. government. Great deal for Apple, but pretty bad deal for the rest of us.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about all of this is it's just so outrageous. I mean, when you think that one, you know, things have gotten to the extreme of being outrageous, something else comes in. But what about what's happening now in the Senate? It looks as though the House will likely pass their bill today. Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin is now saying he's against the legislation. People are waiting to see what Susan Collins, what Lisa Murkowski are going to do. Your thoughts, do you think that this Senate bill may be in some trouble, especially now that they've mixed it up with appeal of a key part of Obamacare?
It's definitely in trouble. You know, they're putting a huge amount of pressure on these people. Collins is under a huge amount of pressure. I don't take for granted that Johnson will stick, but I do appreciate that for now, at least he's saying no to it. Murkowski, this is something that should have people infuriated. They gave her, there's a huge giveaway here that really shouldn't be in there, not my moral feelings about it. I'm talking about the legalities. They're allowing drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. That's not supposed to be in a reconciliation bill. That's supposed to be something that you should only have items in there that are overwhelmingly budgetary in nature. There's some very minor budgetary implications to that. But that's the big giveaway for Murkowski because she's close to the oil interest in Alaska who wanted to drill in the Arctic Wildlife Refuge. They've been looking to do that for decades, so this would finally give them that. That may be thrown out by the Senate parliamentarian. The parliamentarian has been reasonably straight in the past, and I'm saying this based on people who know the law. I'm not a lawyer here, but people who do know the law, people are lawyers. They say if they're acting honestly, there's no way they can't throw that out. If they throw that out, the big bone to Murkowski is gone. So she has little reason to support it, given that she in the past had opposed repealing Obamacare. So if she goes the other way, Johnson goes the other way, Collins really staked her reputation on saying she was going to defend Obamacare. And obviously she understands what this issue. She's not stupid. So you may well have the three votes there. You also have McCain, who, again, who knows, you know, obviously.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, he might enjoy putting in Trump's face, but you just don't know with that guy.
Right. So it and in fact might be in some trouble. And of course, the GOP, they're banking so much on getting something done, you know, before the end of the year. But
it's also worth pointing out here that they're really rushing it. That was in the clip you had.
Yeah.
About how they're rushing it. And the point is they don't want people to understand what's at stake, because they know if people realize what was at stake, they'll be calling up their members of Congress or senators and screaming at them, and they're trying to rush this through before that could happen.
Yeah, and already the polls, I mean, the polls increasingly are showing that people, you know, are opposed to this, so they're not exactly, you know, drinking the Kool-Aid. So we'll have to see how this plays out. But just finally, before you run, I mean, a lot of people are really wondering that if we get, you know, something like the GOP tax plan through, but even some of the moves that the Trump administration is making in other areas, like how long is it going to take to undo some of this damage to people's lives? You know what I mean? It could be decades.
You know, if you get everything through here, it's a really horrible story. If you have a turnaround in 2018 in the elections, you could maybe stop further damage at that point. But at what point could you get a situation where you have a president in Congress who would reverse this legislation? Who knows? And again, people don't get time back. So, you know, taking the case I was talking about with people in college, that they won't be able to afford it. They don't get those years back, so they may never get a college education, have a worse career prospects throughout their life. So a lot of the damage is going to be irreversible.
Well, Dean Baker, we appreciate you joining us and helping us to understand what's going on, breaking this down for us. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks a lot for having me on.